Well, hello, hello, everyone. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for this week's episode of The Boundless Show. Very pleased to be with you. A good show for you. Later on, we're going to be hearing from Canada, from our new friend, Sam Moorcroft, founder and president of ChristianCafe.com, as he weighs in on a listener question about poor grammar and spelling in online communication. Hate it. Hate it. So anyway, but he's a little bit more measured in his response than I am. So it's good that he's weighing in on it. And then for our culture segment, J.J. Heller and her husband are here. For those of you that have followed her folksy music, it's great. And they actually do a tune for us here in the studio after telling us, kind of catching us up on what they're up to. And they now have two little girls who came with them as well. So that was a lot of fun to meet them. But right now, we are going to talk about the family you are marrying into. That's our topic for today, and I have a great panel with me. I want to introduce them. First of all, Joanna is here in the studio. Hey, Joanna.
Hey, Lisa.
Great to have you. Joanna is a newlywed. How many weeks?
Three.
Are you still going strong?
Yes.
Is it good?
Loving
good.
It.
Good. So loving it. So that is very exciting. Wish we could have a whole testimonial on how she met her husband. It's a good story. So, but Joanna is here to weigh in. We also have Anna. Anna's our fabulous Focus Leadership Institute intern this semester. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, very fun to have you. She's still upright after doing about 6 pages or more of prep for me for Louisville for all the interviews I had. So she had to rock that out, which was very helpful, very awesome. So we're having a good time getting to know her. And then Leon, my former boss, who's no longer my boss, but he's still in my life. Here at Focus as part of our larger team.
For better or worse, right?
Yes. It's good that you're here. You know, he is our executive director for parenting here at Focus on the Family, which is a big job. So when we can pull him down to be on a podcast, it's always a privilege.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. So we are going to be talking about the subject of in-laws and extended families today, and how just that whole situation rolls. Because, and I want to kind of kick off the conversation by saying this, why is it just always antagonism? Like every joke, every sitcom, everything that you hear about the other family when it comes to marriage is always some wacky scenario, or there's just outright hatred or antagonism or something crazy. Where do you think the stereotype comes from?
Well, I think part of it is because, you know, people... We don't like change most of the time, you know, and I think there is that there is an element of when a marriage happens in a family, it means significant change to that family. And I think there's the part of the dynamics that are in play, even sometimes playfully, is, you know, what of our family, of who we are, of our identity is going to be retained in this? What is going to be threatened, maybe mildly, maybe not so mildly. And you know, change is just hard to deal with sometimes. So I think that's one of the big dynamics. But then you also have the fact that people are, they care about the people in their lives who are getting married in their family, and they want the very best for them. And so then you've got that dynamic as well, that, you know, is this new relationship really going to be the best for them? And will they be loved as much as I love them? Will they be cared for as much as I've wanted to care for them? So, and I think those are at least maybe a couple of the factors that come into play.
Mm-hmm. I recently watched Shrek 2, and of course we can't really, like, promote certain movies on the show or anything like that, but it was just kind of the classic, like, in-law relationship when Fiona takes Shrek to far, far away to meet her family, and as they see each other, there's the conversation between the parents and the conversation between Shrek and Fiona, and they're like, okay, can we leave now? We saw them. Can we leave? And then, you know, the in-laws don't accept Shrek and vice versa. And there's this whole, you know, plot on Shrek's life, and all kinds of crazy stuff happens before they finally decide to get along. So it just, I think it kind of represented that classic stereotypical in-law chaos. Like you're talking about, Leon, just the having to learn to accept some family that's not always the same as yours that might be different.
Well, and for the couple, too, I think you've got that desire for independence. You know, this is the start of something brand new and fresh, and you're all excited about that. You're wound up in that naturally, understandably. I mean, the scripture is even clear that you know, God understands that's what's happening. So I think that for the couple, I was talking more maybe from the family side of things, but I think you're absolutely right. For the couple, there's this, the newness of the new and the relationship, and we're independent, we're on our own, and so for a lot of times that adds all kinds of layers of expectation and people trying to decipher, what do they mean by this? Why did they do that? Why did they say it that way? And, you know, everything just gets compounded during this time of transition when marriage creates a whole new family.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because this whole discussion was prompted by one of our listeners writing in, a listener named Susie, and she said, you know, all the talk that she hears, first of all, there is the stereotypical, when you marry a person, you marry their family. So she hears that all the time. Mm-hmm. And so there's probably some truth to that, and you two can attest to that, I'm sure. But then she said there's also this idea of, she's heard a lot of, well, you know, when we do Christmas, we're going to be with my family because their family is crazy, or their, you know, and just all this like negativity, and who gets to decide? Right. Whose family is crazy, because how, you know, how is that going to go ahead and play out, you know? So, I mean, I guess my next question in light of that would be going back to what you said, Leon, because there are two biblical notions here, and one is the one of leaving and cleaving. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like versus truly honoring your parents? How can you do, and ultimately that extended family, how can you do both of those things well? What does that look like? Mm.
You know, one of the biblical examples that I love is Ruth and Naomi, because, you know, Naomi's family went to a foreign land. Her sons married Moabite women who obviously probably did not know or respect the God of the Hebrews. And so Naomi apparently just took these daughters-in-law under her wing and taught them and loved them. And by the time that she went back to her hometown, Ruth wanted to go with her and was very loyal to her and became loyal to her God. And I think that's just a beautiful picture.
Yeah, I think part of the tension of that there, when you talk about leaving and cleaving and honoring, though, too, is you have to understand what honoring your parents is really all about. It doesn't mean you obey them. It doesn't mean you do everything that the way that they want you to do it necessarily. But you value them. You show respect to them. You appreciate them. Sometimes even when your parents haven't done something that's maybe worthy of appreciation, you know, parents are imperfect, and so, you know, there's that tension as well. But when you're starting that new family, I think it's going to be a learning experience. There's no formula for it, but it's part of what actually can build up through the tensions, through the working all of that stuff out. It's part of what can actually start to build up depth and problem solving, and just the depth of the relationship between the new husband and wife is that we're getting through this. And yeah, sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's a little ugly, but we're getting through it and we're working on it together. And that's giving us a sense of progress and accomplishment that becomes part of the foundation of the rest of our lives.
I know something that has always been really important to my parents, as far as them feeling honored and respected, is just me taking the time to sit down and talk to them about it and be like, okay, what do you think about this situation? And not just that, but even if I have a different opinion, they feel like they've been respected if they know that I've taken the time to seek their advice and to seek their counsel. And then even if I decide to go with something else, I've had that conversation, they know I've listened to them and I care about what they say, and they feel respected and I can still do what it is I had planned on doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said, Anna, that the Institute had discussed this last week. This was kind of one of the topics of discussion in your class. What was the general consensus there? Like everyone, most of them in your class are pre-marriage, probably. Mm-hmm. So what do you think would be the expectations that everyone has? And then how did that play out in the discussion?
Well, we talked a lot about kind of what we touched on earlier, with there being what we call normals in the group. Like in your family, you have certain normals, like we cook the ham a certain way, and then you get married and they don't, their mom never cooks the ham.
Well, I thought you meant normal people, because that would be me.
No, no.
Let's just be honest. Okay.
But, and then also,
do we get a vote on that?
So you have normals that you used to, then you get married and the normals are different. So it's what normals do you want to sacrifice for the sake of the others? What do you want to make your new normals? Mm-hmm. What do you want to just switch to or drop completely? And then also another thing that we talked a lot about that was really interesting was how in a family system, we all have different roles that we play, whether it's we're the good child, or you're the disciplinary parent, or you're the parent that the kids go to ask because you know that you'll get it easier, or whatever it might be. We all have roles that we play, and then how that translates into your new family system that you're making together with your new husband or wife.
Mm-hmm. You know, Anna mentioned a principle of sacrifice, what things you're going to sacrifice. And I think there's a strong biblical principle that Paul talks about an awful lot that I think ought to be part of the thinking as a couple is navigating these waters. And that's when he says, all things are permissible, but not all things are beneficial. And in that context, he's talking about, what am I willing to sacrifice for the sake of another Christian who might be stumbled by something that I feel free to do in Christ? And I think relationally, that's no different in our families. When two families are coming together through a couple and they are trying to figure out those things, what are we going to retain? You know, will we unroll the toilet paper from the top or the bottom? And some of those small things and bigger things than that. I think that's part of the experience of grace and really kind of sanctification that happens for that couple, is that they're also exercising grace toward their families of origin and figuring all of that out. And what are they going to do that is not a big thing or is a big thing? And how are they going to walk through that and watch the impact on the rest of the family?
Okay, so I want to talk briefly about here, just with that entree. I want to get down into the weeds here and talk about what is negotiable and what isn't. So, Leon, you have like what, close to 20 years of marriage? Or
18.
18, mm-hmm. Getting there.
Yep, 19 how's it
going?
This
I didn't ask you how it's going, by the way. Is it
it's
okay?
Going great.
Good.
It's going great.
Good, okay.
We have 8 kids, so
yes,
that's at least one
okay.
indicator.
Whoa, that was a lot of info right there. Okay, so 18, Joanna's a newlywed. What have you guys had to, what's gone on the altar? How has this looked? What did you expect to give up? Had you no intention of giving up? How has this all played out? Because Leon, you've got all kinds of family dynamics going in with extended
oh, yes.
family.
Yeah, I've had friends tease me that they need a sort of like a program you'd get at a sports event to figure out who's related to who in my family. We've got divorce and remarriage on my side of the family, and step-family members as a part of all of that dynamic. My wife comes from an intact family, and so the experience for her, that was part of the culture shock of, why am I motivated to do certain things the way that I do them? What's the emotional baggage that kind of comes with all of that? I think for us, some of the non-negotiables have been, we want to make all of our families a priority. Figuring out how to do that has been kind of hard. As an example, I grew up where we were trying to, we didn't always have equal time with our parents, but we tried to give equal weight and honor to our parents' families. And so now my wife is marrying into this, and instead of like Leon's family and my family, we have Leon's family A, Leon's family B, and my family. So do we split that a third, a third, a third, or is it like half is split over here and my parents get the other half? And so we've worked through that, and part of that has required us to have some pretty honest, open communication with our parents and figuring that out through the years. It did not happen overnight. But that is one value that I think we've stayed committed to in spite of the fact that sometimes that feels a little messy. As our girls have gotten older, we've had to explain to them why they have so many grandparents and why we're going mm-hmm. to see all of them. But that time with family has been an important value for us.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, my husband's family and mine are pretty similar, like similar background, sense of humor, the way we tease and all of that. So that really helps. I love my in-laws. And the cool thing is, like, I saw with my mom that she did not have a good relationship with her mother-in-law. And so since I've been a teenager, I've prayed to have a good relationship. And then my mother-in-law has prayed since her son was born for his future wife. And it was cool because she said when she met me, she knew I was that girl she'd been praying for, and we weren't even dating yet.
Wow, no pressure there, huh?
Yeah. So anyway, it's just been great to have them, and they're here in town. So obviously we're going to be spending a lot more time with them than with my family. And I think the one non-negotiable is we are trying to prioritize our time together and not always let family time take away from the time we have together, mm-hmm. even though we love spending time with his family.
Because mm-hmm. you have to establish your own traditions
right.
as well and your own rituals,
right.
I would imagine.
Well, one way we've done that in our family is we have a rotation for Christmas time, for instance. And so we've told our parents, you know what, we desperately want to go back to the Midwest to be with you as often as we can during the holidays. But at least once every few years, we're going to do Christmas at home. And because we also want to be building up some Worth family traditions for Christmas. And that, again, that was a process. We didn't arrive at that right away. We didn't have children the first few years, and so it was a lot easier to kind of go gallivanting all over the place. But over time, that was one of the things, too, that we also said is we give up a lot of our vacation time, quite frankly, to go visit them. Mm-hmm. We haven't really done a family vacation in a very long time because we use our family vacation to be with family. But it's part of what we have said is a priority for our family, because we do want to, as best as we can, stay connected with them when they live 12, 14 hours away.
Mm-hmm. Is it easy to become like judgmental and stuff? Because I see like in my siblings and their in-laws, you know, part of me is like, I know what traditions are really important to me. So if you look at like mm-hmm. Christmas, for example, I know that in my family growing up where we carol and we bake things and we have knitted stockings hung by the fire, I'm not going to any guy's house where we're just going to have Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's all I can say. So, you know.
Well, you
so
got to have your like, priorities, Lisa.
Best,
I'm glad that you
does the best celebration win out? Or how? I mean, because it's you could easily, so easily get disappointed. And I know that's going to be something huge that I'll have to grapple with or whatever. Or you just, you know, I think that's where that antagonism comes in. You're just like, these people are not friendly, or these people are not huggers, or these people are not, our family is huggers, you know, and just, I, you know, some people just
okay,
can't let go.
You're hitting me now,
yeah,
where
I mean,
come
I,
from.
Yeah,
oh. No, I think, if, you know, an example of that for our family is, in our family, you never want to offend anybody. And so if you got a gift that wasn't your color or wasn't your size or, you know, you said thank you very much and you kept it. And you actually, if it was something to display, you displayed it in your home. And if it was,
at least for
you know,
a week.
Well, no, I mean, you never re-gifted
well,
or,
know.
You know, you never took it back. My goodness.
Okay.
I mean, maybe you did, but you just were always afraid that that was going to crush somebody or offend somebody. My wife's family, it's a sign of love to them. Oh, by the way, if that is not your color, please go get something that you like. If that's not your size, I hope you'll take it back. Here's the receipt. And when I first saw this in action, I thought, what are these people doing? I mean, they're risking the health of their relationships in this family over these stupid Christmas gifts. And then I realized that that was actually just kind of the way that their family lived and operated. And so I stopped being offended by that. And then, again, part of what we were saying earlier is, in going through all of those things, you know, maybe Kentucky Fried Chicken actually wouldn't be all that bad of an idea because it becomes sort of part of your unique experience as a couple and as a new family. I mean, it's funny you say that because actually this last Thanksgiving, we did fried chicken from a local grocery store in part because we wanted to simplify our holiday experience. It was the first time we'd ever done something like that. But we were able to let go of our expectations because we were doing it for more important reasons. Mm-hmm. But you're just going to have to work through your Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Well, I think it brings up a good point of like valuing the people even more than traditions or more than the way you've always done things. And I know when Steve came home with me for Christmas, he did a great job of just getting to know my family and seeking to understand them. And my brothers put him through a 3-hour initiation process. And that was crazy, but he hung in there and
well
he
done.
Showed them, you know, just being a good sport. And I think some of the best marriage advice I was given was seek to understand before seeking to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
So like with in-laws, seek to understand them. Like their family might be completely different than yours. They might have a different socioeconomic background or culture. I know with my parents, my dad grew up Jewish, my mom grew up Catholic. So obviously when they became a couple and they became Christians, that created a lot of tension, particularly for the Jewish family. So we celebrated Hanukkah and Christmas and Passover and Easter and like, you know, had to try to bring in those different traditions, but kept our, you know, the Christian faith as the strongest thing in our family and the thing we weren't going to negotiate. So, but I think just seeking to understand and respect other people, even if you don't agree or you're not going to do things the same way, to respect them.
And I would think, I mean, I'm not married or anything, but I would think that seeking to understand, even just in the dating process before you get married, would be really important. I know I started dating a guy recently, and my dad was like, well, if you guys are really serious about getting to know each other, then you should invite him over for family Christmas. And I was like, whoa, I think that's a little bit too much too soon, and my family's a little crazy, and we all talk over each other at the same time, and no clue what's going
on. Are we related? Or
yeah, but... But he came over and it ended up being really, really good. My family liked him and he wasn't too freaked out by it. So it ended up being good. But just being willing to get to understand those situations before you get into marriage so that there's not so much culture shock afterwards.
What are those? That brings up a good question. You know, what are some of those things that as you're dating and especially then in the engagement period that you should be ferreting out or that you should? I mean, how much should you know about extended family before you? Because I know some couples that just get married and then it's like the wedding day they're meeting in-laws and they're like, these people wasn't expecting that.
Well, for me, I got to go on a road trip with Steve's parents before we were even engaged. So I got to know them really well. But for Steve, like, we were engaged before he actually met my family, which was hard because Steve had wanted to meet my dad and ask him permission to marry me in person. He ended up doing that over the phone. So, you know, you just, you do what you can.
That
must have
been an interesting phone call.
Yeah, it was. Hey, I'm just meeting you. Can I marry your daughter?
That's right.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think that you're wanting to look at the family dynamics of the relationships there. There's a lot that you can learn about a person by looking at where they come from. And a huge mistake you would make is to simply ignore that because you're in love, right? Or to be too wrapped up around it either. I mean, because part of what you need to do is you need to leave room for what God can be doing in everybody's life. You know, I've thought of it this way. I think the family issues that you observe in what's going on in someone's family life can really foreshadow some things, but they don't necessarily have to be seen as predictor of things in your own relationships. But to ignore that or to not be proactive in trying to understand the dynamics at work could really create huge, huge problems on the back end. My wife really got to know my family and saw some of the beauty of my family and some of the dysfunction of my family, and it gave her a clue as to what made me tick. But I think she would even admit, if she were here in the studio with us today, that it still couldn't completely prepare her for what she walked into once we actually got married. You can't totally prepare for what marriage will be like with this other person, much less to really understand completely the dynamics of the family. So the more you can do to really be as objective as possible, to seek wise, objective counsel from others as possible, to look at the family dynamics, I think the healthier you'll be, the more prepared you'll be to deal with what you couldn't have anticipated once the marriage actually happens.
Leon, I like what you're saying. Like, I think something important to note is whether your date, you know, okay, in my case, look at how he treats his mother, his sister, his parents, his dad, even grandparents. And I got to see him be so tender with all the women in his family and have a good, respectful relationship with his dad, where his dad will even come to him for advice. And that said a lot. But I remember dating someone else and went and met his parents. And I noticed just kind of a negative spirit in one of the parents. And I had seen that a lot in the guy I was dating, too, just a lot of complaining, a lot of being critical or judgmental. So it's interesting where you see those family dynamics, and sometimes they pass down to the next generation, sometimes they don't. I know two of the best marriages I know are from men who came from broken families, including, you know, 2-3 marriages, and yet they have made that determination that they're going to be a great husband and a great father. And my boss is that way, and he has, like, 3 sets of parents, but he has good relationships with all of them, and he is a great family man. So I think you can't necessarily rule out someone whose parents were divorced or who has, you know, a tough family life, but watch their character, watch how they treat other people.
That's good.
And don't be surprised if the other family tests that a little bit. I found that with my in-laws before they were officially my in-laws. They tested us a bit because I was coming from a broken family background, and I think they understandably were concerned about the wisdom of letting their daughter, you know, marry this guy. And I needed to be patient with that and to respect that and to address those concerns and not just assert my rights to say, well, you don't know me, and, you know,
a pox on you, you know, forget you. We're going to do what we want to do. So it gave me an opportunity to demonstrate some of the respect that I think they were looking for from me to my future wife, much less in the way that I interacted with them, too.
That's good. Well, good discussion, y'all. And I think, I mean, the only thing I would add, being not married and having not had to wade into this other than with my siblings and their fams, who are all very different and very, you know, they've kind of come into our family from different angles and different spiritual states and various things. So it's been pretty interesting. But I just think the one thing that comes to mind for me is to never neglect biblical principles when it comes to relationships. Love is still important. Forgiveness is still important. Reconciliation is still important. And I see so many couples that they get into some tiff and then it's like, you go deal with your mother or you go deal with, and all of a sudden it's like, when was this a mine and yours kind of situation? And that's not okay. So, I mean, I just think that's just something I'll throw in there. So, well, thank you guys all so much for being part of this conversation. Very helpful, I think, and good to hear it from two sides of the spectrum and then two of us who have yet to wade into this territory for real. So, good thoughts.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. I've made up my mind, and you're not gonna change it this time. I don't care what you did yesterday, and I know what you'll do tomorrow. When you run away, I will bring you back. Oh, my
Well, hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, I have with me in the studio Dave and JJ Heller. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We just had to bundle the kids up and pack them off to our playground here at Focus on the Family, Wits End, for those of you who are Adventures in Odyssey fans. Kind of an unknown gem for some people, I guess, here at Focus. Was voted the best indoor playground in Colorado by the Denver Post. So,
and we are so thankful because we are, well, I am kind of at my wit's end.
It's for you.
And it's not a playground.
Yeah. No. Yeah, we just flew into Colorado from Phoenix today. Mm-hmm. So I set my alarm for 6:30 this morning and just been going since then. So,
well, and you met up with them, right, Dave? You were driving. So,
yes. I had a day all by myself in the car.
Aww. Yeah.
It was actually really nice.
Yeah, I know.
So really, you should be over at the playground watching.
Maybe.
Putting
maybe
in your time. So, well, it's great to have you guys here. And many in our audience, I'm sure, are familiar with your music. In fact, I first heard you, I think it must have been several years ago now, at one of the NRB conventions. So you guys sang, and I was like, what is this song, Your Hands? And I was like, I love it. And just, you know, you guys were both up there, and I was like, ah. And so I was very thrilled when I knew you guys were going to be in the area for sure. You came out last fall with, what, your fourth full length?
Well, I think it's our fifth, actually. But we have two albums prior to that we just don't even talk about anymore. So it's it's our, the fifth one that we're actually proud of.
Because the first two were recorded at Six Flags or something. Yeah. Was it one of those? Where you,
yeah.
The American
booth.
Idol experience where you talk. Okay.
It was a time of growth.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. I mean, we feel they played an important role, but we just don't tell anybody about them anymore.
All right. Well, that's good. You guys, you kind of mix, you have acoustic. This album, Deeper, is very acoustic in kind of flavor. More so than your previous one. And I know that's kind of a weird story. Maybe you guys should tell that about how the song, how Your Hands started getting a lot of play, and it kind of made you step back from this project and kind of shift things around. So kind of what was that experience like?
Very unexpected. Mm-hmm. So what happened was we wrote a song called Your Hands, and it actually came out of a time that was really difficult for me. And the song is about struggling and where is God when we're in pain and why doesn't he answer our prayers the way that we want him to. And so it was just kind of exploring that. I was experiencing severe anxiety and panic attacks, and it was on a daily basis, and I was praying that God would take it away and I wouldn't
and Sarah Groves, we were just talking to her.
Oh.
She too, anxiety. I'm telling you. Maybe you need to hook up with her and have a little kindred spirit.
Yeah, she and I talk sometimes whenever she's up for it.
Yeah.
Because she's...
kind of a role model.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
Maybe it's because lyrically and style, maybe it's the similarities. Maybe you need to try some hip hop or hard rock.
It'll loosen up a little bit.
That's my collective wisdom, but it's obviously not good.
Are you charging us for this advice?
No, I never charge advice because I dispense it so often and just there's no rhyme or reason to it. So don't worry about it. And rebukes. Those are my two things that I dispense freely.
Your spiritual gifts.
No worries. That'll come out. Yeah, that'll come out soon. Don't worry about that. So anyway, so continue.
Okay, so I was having lots of panic attacks and I didn't understand why the Lord wouldn't just take it away because I knew that he could. And so Dave and I wrote a song about that with a friend of ours named Katie Herzig, and we recorded it. And it's interesting because the Lord took me on this really long, slow journey of healing, and I'm in a much better place now. And he taught me so much during that time, but it was difficult. And I feel like the Lord kind of answers our prayers that way most of the time. Instead of just immediately giving us what we want, he lets us grow in it and learn more about who we are and more about who he is. And even though it's painful, but it's a part of the refining process, I suppose. And so anyhow, along that journey, about 2.5 years ago now, I'm trying to think, a girl decided to use that song, Your Hands, to audition for the show So You Think You Can Dance, which was totally unexpected. And we just one day got a call from the producer of the show, and he said, hey, I work at this TV show and a girl wants to use your song. Can we have permission to use it? And we were really excited. And then we thought, oh no, what if she's one of those dancers who's not really that great? But it turned out that she really was. And it was this great segment and almost 7 million people, I think, watched that episode. And one person happened to work at a Christian radio station in Houston, Texas. He liked our song and started playing it on the radio. And then stations all over the country started playing the song. And before we knew it, we started to receive letters and email messages and Facebook posts from people from all over just saying that they heard the song for the first time and that God used it to speak to them in the midst of a really confusing or difficult, painful time in their own life. And so it was really cool to hear all these stories and to see the Lord working in all these people's lives who we've never met before. And then to remember back to the time when I was praying that God would just immediately take away all of my pain. And I didn't know it then, but he allowed me to go through that experience so that we could write a song about it, so that he could use it in the lives of thousands of people. And it's just such an encouragement, like a tangible example of the Lord working and the goodness of the Lord, even when we can't see it ourselves. And so back to your initial question.
Yeah, so Your Hands, the song that ended up on the radio, was actually on a record that we recorded in 2008, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It ended up on the TV show at the end of 2009. So like that record had been out and kind of had a life of its own even prior to the song ending up on the radio. And so we had already gone into the studio and recorded this other project, Deeper, that we were planning to release in the fall of 2009. And basically right before we released it, the song Your Hands ended up being on national television and then started getting played on the radio. And so we decided, like, why release this new project when a lot of people are discovering this other song and other record that we'd made? And so we just kind of let people sort of find out about JJ through that project, which was called Painted Red. And then it came time to, like, record another record because we didn't really make Painted Red or Deeper with radio in mind necessarily.
Because we never thought radio would play our music, because it just doesn't, most of it doesn't really fit neatly into that format, and which we were fine with. And so that's why it was so surprising that God just kind of interceded and said, I think I want this song on the radio. And it was a complete surprise to us. But then all of a sudden we were faced with these new questions of, okay, well, we need a follow-up single, and what do we do? So we went back into the studio and recorded some songs that we thought would fit better in a radio format. And
so that record became known as When I'm With You. And so that came out after our record Painted Red.
I hope you're all taking notes.
Yeah, I can draw you a picture if you need. So that record came out in 2010. And yet we still had this other kind of like acoustic project that we made that still hadn't been released. And so this past year, 2011, we decided, like, let's go ahead and put it out and just kind of let some people hear some of the songs that ended up on When I'm With You, but kind of in their more raw acoustic form. And then we added a couple of new songs to it as well. So it was really fun to be able to kind of let the fans, like, hear something that wasn't necessarily targeted to be a big commercial success, but still was a great representation of who we are and where we are in our kind of time of life. So,
well, it's interesting that you mentioned the radio bit, because I think there are a lot of, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but there are several artists on mainstream radio that do have that kind of style and sound. I mean, I think of Christina Perry or even Adele to some extent, and the Perrys, and just kind of like when I think and I'm like, wow, that was reminiscent of that or whatever. But that's interesting. So it's great that that kind of had that little breakthrough for you guys. So tell me, I mean, this is kind of an obvious question. I'm sure you get asked it a lot, but I just have to know, how do you guys actually write your songs? Because I sing a lot and I like music, but I never just have this song come into my head and feel like I have a tune to it and lyrics and write it down. So what is that process like?
Well, it's very intentional these days because we have two little girls. We have a 3-year-old and a 5-month-old. And so we have to be very strategic in when we sit down together, and we have to carve out some time. And Dave and I write music together, and I don't know, every time is a little bit different, but sometimes it starts out with Dave will come up with a chord progression on the guitar, and then we'll start maybe humming some melodies. And you know what, Dave actually, the last time that we sat down to write songs, he had a great idea. He thought that we should listen to a chapter of a book, an audio book, and then try to write a song based on that, almost like an exercise to get our creativity flowing. But it actually turned into a song that we really like. So
The creative process is just kind of mysterious anyway. Like, there, so many people write songs in different ways, and some people will sit down and write all the lyrics and then try to fit music to it, and other people the opposite. And the way that we've found works best for us most of the time is to kind of do them at the same time. And so, you know, a lot of it is kind of trying to figure out, like, okay, you know, what are we trying to say, and how do we encapsulate that in the first verse in the chorus? And after we really feel good about that, then we kind of just try to expand and sort of tackle different viewpoints. But, I think we're pretty logical and kind of methodical in our songwriting. And I think a lot of other people, kind of take a much more intuitive sense about their songwriting and just kind of really want to go off of how they feel and just sort of let creativity flow out of them too. And so, I mean, there's kind of no wrong or right way to do it. And it's really kind of a mystery, but it's fun to be a part of it.
And I also, I will kind of keep a running catalog of notes that I take, whether I'm listening to a sermon or hear somebody say something that I think is profound or interesting, and I'll just jot it down on my phone in the little notes program, and then when I sit down to write a song, I'll reference those things and see if anything sparks my interest and kind of go off of that.
Wow. Well, you guys have made the choice, the interesting choice, to remain indie artists, in, you know, even with the furor over your hands and kind of everything that's come since then. What is unique about being an indie artist? Like, explain to people what that involves, for good and for bad.
Well, it's really great. We love being independent. I think especially at this stage of life, for me being a mom of two, if we were with a label, I'm pretty sure that they would push us a lot harder than we push ourselves. And actually, I think it kind of drives Dave a little nuts.
It does drive me a little nuts.
Because he's always been the manager of what we do and the accountant. And for a long time, he was also the booking agent. And basically, he did everything besides sing the lead vocal.
Well, you're obviously still driving a truck with a trailer, so you haven't gotten out of that.
That's true. I wear many, many hats.
Yes, he does.
Well, yeah, I mean, so essentially what JJ's saying is, as an independent artist, you have the freedom to create whatever kind of music you want and record it however you want, but you're also on the hook to be able to fill all of those other roles and responsibilities that come in that a lot of people don't necessarily kind of associate with being a musician. And
we basically have to run our own small business, which most artist types are not suited for, which I am totally not, but that's why Dave is so amazing.
Well, thank you.
I know, you better watch it. You're probably going to get some job offers. You're going to have to decide.
He kind of has already.
Where your loyalties lie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but a big part of being an independent artist, as far as I'm concerned, is kind of knowing where to draw the line and where not to spend your money and where not to spend your time, and to really kind of focus on like a few very primary kind of tasks at hand, so that you can accomplish your mission rather than just kind of keeping a whole lot of plates spinning in the air and not necessarily doing what you really want to be doing.
But the cool thing about being independent is we've been able to assemble our own team basically and kind of replicate what a label would do for us, only we get to hand pick the people who do it for us, and we get to decide who we want to do certain jobs and what we don't think is necessary. And
it's just very streamlined. But that's not to say that working with a record label is a bad choice, because a lot of artists don't necessarily have the ability or desire to manage their career and, you know, book plane tickets and book plane tickets is a really silly example, but there's just a lot of minutia that a lot of musicians would rather give to somebody else so that they can keep playing music.
Okay. Now, so talk about the allure of a specifically acoustic album, which is what Deeper is. Like, why did you say we want to get back to that and create that kind of album?
Well, I feel at the root of our music, that's who we are. And if you were to see us in concert, that's what you would hear. It's just Dave plays the guitar and sings backup, and I sing the lead, and sometimes I'll play the harmonica. And so it's very simple and very straightforward. And so our fans have been asking for a while for something more acoustic like that. And it was really fun to track it. It was really difficult, though, to not want to keep adding more parts to it and just leave it stripped down. But we're really happy with the way that it turned out. And I think we're kind of excited to do our next project and do something with a little more production. I feel like we kind of go back and forth between recording something that's a little more full and then something that's more stripped down, and then we're tired of that, so we go back again.
Do you want to hear what my two favorite songs are?
Yes.
Because just in case you get asked in the future, you know, when you talk to Lisa, what did she say were her favorite songs? I'm just saying. definitely like When I'm With You. I just think that is fun and very, you know, kind of poppy, the little poppy flair to it. And then Red Against Your Black is my other favorite.
Cool.
So just keep that in the vault if you ever need to pull it out.
Yeah, we'll lock that one away.
Tell people any kind of specific endorsements or whatever. I'm just saying. Okay, now let's talk about a little bit about the two of you and kind of how you met, because here at Boundless we talk a lot about relationships and kind of how those play into not only people's lives individually, but how they ultimately do ministry together and what it means to serve together in that kind of partnership. And I know you were like leading worship, right, Dave? And Jay just basically glommed onto you and
yeah, pretty much
something like that. Yeah, she went to a little Christian school down the street from my university in San Jose, California, and so I was leading worship with the worship team at Campus Crusade for Christ at my school, and JJ ended up being a part of the worship team. But at that same time, I think we were like beginning our sophomore year of college, JJ had just started to write her own songs as well. And so I had a friend, a roommate actually, who really wanted to be in a band. And so when he heard that JJ wrote songs, he kind of really pushed us into like the open mic nights at local coffee shops and that kind of thing. And you know, we sang a lot of really bad songs really early on.
Yeah.
People really responded to JJ's ability to connect with the audience and just the kind of genuine nature that she had. And we've never really had this sort of desire to be sort of superstars or anything like that. The whole idea behind what we do is like, hey, we're regular people who happen to write music, and so can we play some stuff for you, you know? And and I think the audience is in kind of this time, day and age that we're in with American Idol and all of these sort of star generating kind of devices that we see on all of these different networks, these big talent scouts and things, like, we kind of just want to remind people, like, hey, it's okay to, like, not be super flashy and showy and just kind of share that, like, we're messed up too. And we wrote...
At least you are, Dave.
Oh, yeah. You're perfect, JJ.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys feel you had a romanticized or idealized view of marriage? I mean, were you kind of wrapped up in that at all, or were you pretty I mean, because how do you add marriage to a music ministry, you know, especially on the front end as fledgling?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, I think at the beginning we didn't actually envision playing music for a living in tandem. Like, playing music was just something we did while we were in college. And as we got closer and closer to graduation, it was like, hey, we're moving towards marriage, and also a lot of people really like our stuff. Like, so maybe we should get married and just try this music thing for a year. And if it works out, we'll play music for another year. And if it doesn't work out, then we'll go get real jobs, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of launched into an adventure that kind of every year we kind of reevaluated and was like, hey, we've grown from where we were before.
And I think because it's been such a journey from, and neither of us really expected to be where we are now in terms of how many people have heard our music now, I think it's kind of bonded us, just to be able to have so much in common and so many shared experiences. And it's so much fun to be on stage together and to interact. And we kind of banter back and forth. And it's hard for me to imagine doing this without him, because it's just so normal for me now. We lived in Nashville for a while, and so many of our friends were married, and one person in the marriage would be the traveling musician. And in most cases, it was the man. And so the guy would go travel around and leave his family at home. And it would just be this really difficult time of feeling torn of, you know, he's going and doing what he loves and fulfilling his calling, but then he's apart from his family, and then there's this tension, and it's tough. And so for us to be able to travel together and to share all of these experiences, I think is pretty unique and pretty mm-hmm. amazing. And
well, and your life just seems so normal. Like, I think you said somewhere on the website that on the front end of 2011, you were looking forward to spending time with family and friends and doing craft projects.
Oh, uh-huh.
I'm like, oh my, okay. So she fits in the crafts,
yeah.
at least.
That's good. Yeah. Well, I try to.
Make that a priority. Now, do you guys have ministry goals for the future, or do you kind of take things as they come?
Mostly we take things as they come. We're not naturally dreamers, but we were actually at a conference recently where we were kind of challenged to have big dreams and see what God does. And big dreams in the sense of things that will benefit the kingdom of God, not I have a big dream to be a millionaire so that I could have a big house. But you know, maybe God gives you that exact dream, but for the benefit of, I want to be a philanthropist and make a huge difference in stopping hunger across the world. So we're trying, at least, I know God's put it on my heart to kind of step out on a limb and say, okay, Lord, this is what I feel is on my heart, and see what he does with that. As long as it's in alignment with the character of God and who and what I think he wants for my life. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of excited about this next year to see where it goes. What do you think, Dave?
Well, what's your dream?
Well, okay, specifically?
Yeah.
One dream, I think it would be really amazing to play our music at a Women of Faith conference.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also I'm in a Beth Moore Bible study now.
Sure.
And I think it'd be really cool to meet Beth Moore. And
well, you need to write a song that's titled Glory, and that's one of her famous sayings, you know, everything is glory, glory. So at least from what I know of her Bible studies that I've done. So maybe if you could tease the hair up a little bit higher and just get that working, you could probably land in her sphere a little bit more closely. I don't know. We'll see. And I don't know what Dave would have to do. I'm not sure.
And I don't know what I would have to do either.
We'd have to see that. But that's great. And we have your girls are over. We're going to give them a little bit more time over at Wits End at the playground, because you guys are going to play a song for us. And we're looking forward to that. Of course, we love featuring the music of folks here on the show, and we use it as bumpers between the different segments, which gives us a great opportunity to showcase it. But we love it when people are willing to play live. So, but I don't see the harmonica.
Oh,
you're right.
Okay. No.
We left it. Sorry.
That's okay. All right. Well, what are you going to play?
I think we should play What Love Really Means.
Okay.
You all right with that?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, let's do it. And for those of you who want to know, which I'm sure you will, make sure that you check out jjheller.com for all the info on tour dates and everything about the music and about them. And also, JJ can be found on Facebook, JJ Heller. So thanks so much, you guys.
No problem.
Cries in the corner where nobody sees him.
He's the kid with the story no one would believe. He prays every night, dear God, won't you please, could you send someone here who will love me? Who will love me for me? Not for what I have done or what I will become. Who will love me for me? 'Cause nobody has shown me what love really means. What love really means. Her office is shrinking a little each day. She's the woman whose husband has run away. She'll go to the gym after working today. Maybe if she was thinner, then he would have stayed. And she says, who'll love me for me? Not for what I have done or what I will become. Who will love me for me? 'Cause nobody has shown me what love really means. Really means. He's waiting to die as he sits all alone. He's a man in a cell who regrets what he's done. He utters a cry from the depths of his soul. Oh Lord, forgive me, I wanna go home. Then he heard a voice somewhere deep inside, and it said, I know you've murdered, and I know you've lied, and I have watched you suffer. I'll tell you that I will love you for you, not for what you have done or what you will become. I will love you for you. I will give you the love that you never knew. Love you.
Well, hey, everyone. We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have with me on the line from Canada, Sam Moorcroft. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good to have you here. I'm doing well. As you all know, Sam is the founder and president of ChristianCafe.com, and you know of our alliance with them, and you see it on our site, and many of you have benefited from the from really kind of the special that you offered us, the Boundless Code that allows people extra time on their free trial. So it's been kind of fun, and we've heard from folks who have tried it out. So obviously, someone like this listener who has jumped into the online fray and has a question for you, so I'm going to pose it right here. Let's see. This person says, I'm in my early 30s and have desired to be married for years. Finally, I took the plunge and tried online dating. I've corresponded with a few guys. However, I found myself distracted, repelled even by incorrect grammar, misspellings, and just a general lack of writing ability. Does a guy's seeming inability in grammar and composition indicate a lack of intelligence or a lack of interest on his part? Are my expectations too high, or am I reading too much into this?
Well, the short answer is it's obviously important to her, so I would say that it doesn't indicate lack of intelligence, perhaps, but it is something that obviously bothers her. So I would say that you don't have to accept that from a guy that would be a potential match for you. I know that when I was single, it was very important for me that somebody knew how to write well and express themselves and had grammar and spelling done. But that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with somebody if they don't, because I know a lot of people who type very, very quickly, and they make tons of mistakes, and they're not that fussed. My wife, when she is writing, she'll make mistakes, and it's not important to her. But it's important to you, so therefore, I think that you'd be better matched with somebody who fits exactly what you're looking for, and small things that kind of seemingly small that kind of bug you are, to me, symptoms of something that potentially might bug you later. Maybe the person's super laid back, and you wouldn't be well matched with somebody who's laid back. Whereas, like I say, going back to my example, it was important to me to be have somebody who could write and read and spell and stuff. Again, it's not a lack of education necessarily, because I know a lot of engineers who can't spell if their life depended upon it, but they're clearly well-educated and well-employed and whatnot, so there's no issue around that. And some people, it's just not that important. And, of course, there's some people who just are not as educated as the rest of us, and that's not a problem either, because I believe that there's God has a match for everybody. And if you have the desire to be married, then I believe that God gave you that desire. And so that doesn't mean that you have to sacrifice necessarily. You can't have a perfect list and say everybody has to meet all the things on that list. And I'm talking above and beyond obvious things like, do they have a relationship with the Lord? You know, are they growing in their faith? Those sort of fundamentals definitely have to be there. But then there's a bunch of likes. But to me, this is sort of in between a necessity and a like, and if it's important to you, then there's nothing wrong with expecting that in return. So it doesn't convey a lack of interest just because somebody can't spell. I don't think somebody's going to deliberately misspell to kind of hint that they're not interested. I don't think it's got anything to do with that. Mm-hmm. But my advice is find somebody that something like that is not annoying you right off the bat, and it's a legitimate thing. I don't mean, you know, you've got quirky habits and somebody is not exactly what you want, in which case you might say I'm being picky. But in this particular case, I don't think it's being picky at all.
Yeah. And I would say there's a difference between once you're in conversation, emailing back and forth. Yeah, if you're just shooting off a quick email or responding to someone, maybe there will be you're not going to have a chance to run it through Webster's or something. But I know when my friend Travis and I wrote that post, 10 Online Don'ts for Men and Women, one of the things I talked about was bad spelling and grammar. And I think that when it comes to like crafting a profile, that's when guys and girls really should have someone look over their shoulder and maybe help them with some edits, because you don't want to come out of the gate looking sloppy or like you don't care or like you just threw this together and this is something you just do on a Saturday night and you don't really care whether or not you get married. So there's probably a difference. But I totally agree with you, Sam, in the sense that, a few spelling or punctuation errors does not indicate, you know, you're completely unintelligent. So I think that's a good delineation there.
And I just think the same goes for a photo. I mean, if you, to me, sometimes people go, this is so unromantic to link this to selling, but effectively you're selling yourself. And so if someone's not putting the effort into selling themselves, you can't help how you look, you can't help how you're educated, et cetera, but you can put your best foot forward. So the photo analogy, I would say, where, you know, someone's not smiling, or they're posting their driver's license photo or their passport photo. You want somebody who's taken the time, like you're saying, Lisa, to craft their profile and to put a lot of effort into it, because it basically, what that does is it tells you a lot about that person. And it doesn't mean somebody's shallow if they're not taking a lot of time. It just may not be something that's important to them, or maybe they don't feel confident in their writing skills, but they really excel when they're talking to you. You know, whether it's fast emails that are, you know, maybe the odd typo, or when it progresses, if it does, to, say, phone calls or eventually a meeting in person. But it's important to you that somebody has a well-crafted profile and is writing what you would regard to be as acceptable on sort of your level. You can't sort of marry down. People think, well, maybe I'm being picky and I should just give in to this. Well, if you're giving in to something like this, what else are you going to give into down the road? You know, let's say he doesn't want to go to church that often. Is that something you're going to compromise on as well? So there's a difference between being picky for picky's sake, because you have certain quirks and, you know, maybe not aware of it or don't, you know, take action to recognize you have those quirks. There's a difference between that and something that says that this person is potentially compatible. And the advantage of a site like ChristianCafe.com is there's lots and lots of potential suitors out there. And so you don't have to just settle, so to speak, for, you know, this guy wrote me, and so therefore I'm just going to correspond and hope something develops and I'll overlook these things that are annoying me. If they're already annoying you, that's not a good sign.
All right. Well, thank you, Sam Moorcroft, for answering that question for us. Very helpful. And for those of you who want to find out more of the questions that we have addressed on the show in the past, go to boundless.org, or you can write to us at editor@boundless.org if you want to submit a question for yourself. So that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.